This is the Finding Light After Loss Workshop in the Fitzgerald Ballroom at the 17th Annual Northeast Freedom Area Convention. The joy is in the journey.
Josh, I would like to welcome everyone to the 17th Annual Northeast Freedom Area Convention of Narcotics Anonymous, the joys in the journey. Can we open this meeting with a moment of silence followed by the serenity prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things that I cannot change, the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. You must wear your convention badges at all times. This is to recognize that you are part of the convention. This policy will be strictly enforced by convention trusted servants. Please be respectful and smoke in the designated areas. This is a must. Smoking is prohibited anywhere else on the property. Parking is free. Make sure to get your parking ticket validated at registration or the front desk. There are coffee stations throughout the convention for sale. If you have a banquet ticket, you have priority seating. This means you enter the main speaker meeting prior to others. I have asked Jamie to read the press statement.
Hi, I'm Jamie. I'm an addict.
Hi, Jamie.
Press statement. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and film. This is to protect the membership and reputation of Narcotics Anonymous. We do not disclose last names nor appear in the media as members of Narcotics Anonymous. No individual inside or outside the fellowship represents Narcotics Anonymous. If you are approached by members of the press, please direct them to convention information / hospitality. They have prepared press packages and will be more than willing to assist with any questions. Thanks for letting me read.
Thanks for reading. I've asked Brandon to read the responsibility statement.
Hi guys, I'm an addict named Brandon. Responsibility statement. Our personal conduct is a direct reflection of Narcotics Anonymous by demonstrating our personal responsibility. We create positive images of our fellowship. Our conduct is the first and last impression that the public will have of Narcotics Anonymous. If unable to conduct ourselves responsible, you will be asked to leave. Shirts and shoes must be worn in all public areas at all times. Not everyone stays up all night. Please keep the music level in the rooms, in the halls, to a minimum during the hours of 11 p.m. to 8 a.m.
I've asked Arnold to come read who is an addict.
Addict Arnold. Most of us do not have to think twice about this question. We know our whole life and thinking was centered in drugs in one form or another, to getting and using and finding ways and means to get more. We live to use and use to live. Very simply, an addict is a man or woman whose life is controlled by drugs. We are people in a grip of continuing and progressive illness whose ends are always the same: jails, institutions, and death.
I have asked Matt to read why we're here.
Yeah, Matt.
My name is Matt, I'm an addict. Why are we here? Before coming to the fellowship of NA, we could not manage our own lives. We could not live and enjoy life as other people do. We had to have something different, and we thought we had found it in drugs. We placed their use ahead of our welfare, of our families, our wives, husbands, and our children. We had to have drugs at all costs. We did many people great harm, but most of all, we harmed ourselves. Through our inability to accept personal responsibilities, we were actually creating our own problems. We seemed to be incapable of facing life on its own terms. Most of us realized that in our addiction, we were slowly committing suicide. But addiction is such a cunning enemy of life that we had lost the power to do anything about it. Many of us ended up in jail or sought help through medicine, religion, and psychiatry. None of these methods was sufficient for us. Our disease would always resurface and continue to progress until, in desperation, we sought help from each other in Narcotics Anonymous. After coming to NA, we realized we were sick people. We suffered from a disease for which there is no known cure. It can, however, be arrested at some point, and recovery is then possible. Thanks for letting me share.
I have asked Daphne to read the social media statement.
Daphne.
Hi, Daphne.
My name is Daphne, and I'm an addict.
Daphne.
We recognize it is a common practice for members to take photos and videos at the NA events and post them on social networks. We do not believe this to be in conflict with our traditions, so long as they are not made available to the general public. Please be considerate of our guiding principles and the anonymity of others as you share your photos and videos from this NA event. For more information, please see the service pamphlet, social media, and our guiding principles. Thanks for allowing me to read.
Thank you. Start recording. Never mind. This is a workshop speaker meeting on the topic of finding life after loss. And we have asked Christina and Leon to speak. I would like to introduce our first speaker, Christina D.
I'm Chris Manatic. First off, I'd like to thank the convention committee for seeing something in me that I don't always see in myself. It's an honor to be here, and I hope that something I say might help someone else that is going through what I went through. I need to go back a long time ago to kind of give you a base of how I got through what I got through. I used, of course. I came into the rooms in 1989, and I stayed around for a little while, and I made some friends. And I went back out, and I stayed out for a very long time. But when I came back, those friends were here. And so two things happened. I knew what to do. I knew, and I grabbed a hold of those friends. And I knew to let go of all my old ones. Of course, I probably didn't have a whole lot because by the time I came back, I was isolated. I didn't use with anybody. I used by myself. At 4 months clean, I was going to a meet, getting ready to go to a meeting, and I found out that my 14-year-old son. I walked down the hallway to open his door to get him up at 2:00 in the afternoon, and I couldn't open the door. And when I looked up, there was a bungee cord hanging over the other side of the door. And I knew right then that he had taken his life. Now, I don't know if it was the fact that the only person I had to talk to about it was my sponsor, who was my friend from when I was clean the first time. But I think that's probably what it was, is that that was the only person. I didn't have any other friends to call to talk about it, but that's what I did. I didn't think about using. I didn't think about doing anything else but calling her because I needed to talk to somebody besides my family because they were going through the same thing I was. And I called her, and she picked me up and took me to a meeting that night. That was February 7th. And in that meeting, they read the Just for Today. I don't remember anything that was said in that meeting, but I remember this. In the Just for Today, it said, "Many of us have lost love through no fault of our own. Some of us has lost all our material wealth. A few of us has even grieved the loss of our own children." That was the start. At that point, I knew that I had a higher power. At that point, I knew that someone besides the people in the room, someone had my back. Because it told me right there, someone was speaking to me through the literature. Someone was speaking to me that wasn't flesh and blood. Someone told me that they had me. Why else would that be read on the day my son died? And I ran with that. You know, I swear to you, every time I shared for the next year, I shared about that, about my son passing away. Now, here's the kicker, though. What I didn't share about, see, I was using when my son was born, and my mother took him. My mother raised him for 14 years, not me. And I had only moved back into my mother's house a year or two prior. I didn't have a relationship with him. I didn't feel the grief like the rest of my family was. And I wasn't quite sure what I was feeling. But I can tell you that I felt like something was wrong with me, because I was upset. But I started to figure out that the grief I was feeling was because my family was feeling grief. And I wasn't sure if it was the grief of losing him or the grief of what they were going through or what it was. I was numb. I had 4 months clean when this happened. I was numb, completely numb. I didn't have any joy in my life. I didn't have any grief in my life. I didn't have anything. All I knew is all I could do was cry. And I think, now that I look back, I wasn't crying for any of them. I was crying for myself because I couldn't feel anything. At about 2.5 years clean, 2.5 years clean, I shared in a meeting about something, and somebody finally came up to me and said, "I lost my child too." So I finally, after 2.5 years, had someone that reached out to me and talked to me about it. And I started to relate to them. So the fears that I had were the fears that my other children were going to die also. And they were crazy fears. You know, if they were 10 minutes late coming home, all of a sudden the police were going to knock on the door and there was a horrible car accident and they were all dead. I was planning their funerals, right? And this person talked to me about that. And I got to relate to another addict who went through that. at 3 years clean, you know, and I'm doing the steps all this time. I'm talking to people. At 3 years clean, I went to a sponsorship retreat. And a lady sat up the front. And she felt exactly as I did. She felt that she didn't have those feelings because she never had that connection with her son when he passed away. And for the first time, I felt like it was okay to feel that way. And I realized the feelings, what I had is what she had. And that is the feeling that I will never get to have that relationship with my son. I will never get to make amends to that boy. And on top of that was the guilt that he took his life. And how much of my using and how much of me not being in his life and the abandonment issues and all of that stuff had to do with him doing that. And then it started over, you know, at 3 years clean, it started over. The grief started again. Me trying to work through all those feelings. But I did it. And once again, I started sharing in every meeting, these new feelings coming up. And So this is what happened. I'm working the steps. I'm sharing all this stuff. For the first 3 years after he died, Thanksgiving, Christmas, his birthday, and the day he passed away, boom, 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 I would go into a shell. I would stop going to meetings. People had to drag me out of the house. I would stop calling. People had to call me. And I would just isolate myself. Right before Thanksgiving, the fourth year, I read something in the Living Clean book. And it said, we can have our feelings, but not be had by them. And it dawned on me that I don't need to be consumed by grief. I don't need to be consumed by the loss of building a connection with my son or making amends with my son. I can have the feelings of those feelings, but they don't need to overwhelm me. And then it dawned on me that I don't have to let feelings overwhelm me at all, period, no matter what they are. I don't have to let anger overwhelm me. I don't have to let joy overwhelm me, because I'll tell you, sometimes it does, and I get hyper and I'm jumping off the walls. I don't have to let feelings overwhelm me to the point where my life gets out of control. Peace started coming into my life. And with that, more balance came into my life. My daughter came to me. My daughter started using, and her life fell apart so fast. And she came to me and she said, I don't understand why my life fell apart when he died, but yours got better. And I sat down and I thought about it. And, you know, I realized, as much as my heart wishes it didn't happen, I don't believe that I'd be where I am in my program if it didn't. I don't believe I would have had the faith that I have now. I don't believe I'd had the relationship with my higher power that I have now. I don't believe that I would have the relationship with people in the rooms that I have now if none of that would have happened. Because that made me reach out. That made me reach for people in these rooms. It made me depend on the program to get through. And, you know, so I sat down and I explained it to her. You know, I told her, I didn't come in these rooms planning to be in the no matter what club. I really didn't. I thought, well, let's give it a try again. That was my club. But somehow I wound up in the no matter what club. And, you know, I accept people that relapse. And I will help people that relapse. But I don't listen to no excuses. Because you choose to use. It isn't because this happened or that happened or your boyfriend broke up with you. And I don't even want to hear that someone died and you used, because you do not have to. Period. No matter what. And you know, what I tell my sponsees and what I tell my friends is you're going to have feelings. Using isn't going to help. You put the drugs in you, and as soon as they're gone, you have those feelings. You put the drugs in you, and as soon as they're gone, you have those feelings. 10 years down the road, when you stop using, you're still going to have those feelings. So why use? Walk through them immediately, and you grow from it. You know, and that is the only way I can see to do this program. That's it. You know, you got to move forward. You got to walk through the feelings, no matter what they are. And I guarantee you there's someone in these rooms that can help you. And sometimes it's you and God, but you'll be helped. You know, it took me quite a while to figure out what my higher power was. In the beginning, it was the message. It was what people shared. It was the literature. And that's what it was. That's what I got it from. And it took me until I did my 6th or 7th step to finally have a relationship, my own relationship with the higher power. But you can still do it when you come in. You know, it's in the words that people share. It's in the books. It's really kind of easy. Just don't pick up. I don't know. That's how I did it, you know, and I hope I help somebody, but that's all I got.
I would like to thank Christina for sharing a great meeting. I would like to introduce our second speaker, Leon F.
I'm an ag. My name's Leon. Hey, my man. Good morning. Good morning. Thank you for your share. I didn't know I was gonna get nervous until I got up here, right? Look, I'm truly, truly grateful to the program.
Good boy. Good.
Yeah. Hey, name Leon. Truly grateful to the seasoned members and the predecessors of Narcotics Anonymous for teaching me and showing me how to stay clean and dead. Something I did not know. Truly grateful that I got here after a lot of failed attempts. You know what I mean? I came in one day and I decided like I wanted to do something different. And heck of a topic. I'm just grateful, like she said, like the prerequisite. Through all those failed attempts, when I got back here, I became a student in Narcotics Anonymous. And I sat in meetings and I listened. I was very quiet. I was very attentive. And I listened to what everybody had to say because I didn't know what I would need later. They used to say, keep your bags packed. You know, God gave you 2 ears and 1 mouth for a reason. Listen more than you talk. And I came here and I listened. And October the 8th, my 31-year-old son died. You know, I get a knock on the door. October the 9th at 4:20 in the morning, and it's the police. And I'm like, Sam, you know. And I know it's my son related because of my son's issues. I know it ain't got nothing to do with me. I know it got something to do with my son. I just don't know what it is. I know the police have been looking for him. And my whole house is already the way they knock. My dog's barking. And And I go to the door, I look at, you know, I got it with a camera, says the police. I go down and they said they want to come in. And I said, nah, you can say what you got to say right here. You know, because it's like in my mind, it's like the, what do you call it, the vampires. You know what I mean? I once you let them in, you got to invite them in and then they can do damage to you. So I wasn't for that. Then I let them in and they told me have a seat. I'm like I don't want to sit down. You know what I mean? And it's like my house. And you know. And then when he told me, he said, look, I just came here to let you know that your son was your son died last night. He was killed last night at 6 p.m. in Pennsylvania, right? And I sat down and had to get myself together and listen to all he's saying because I knew my son. I ain't in denial about who my son was or who he was. My son was one of us untreated. You know what I mean? Untreated, you know what I mean? And with the inability to say that's what this issue is, you know. And what I do know is that I can't make you an addict. I can't make you get help. Those are those things that you have to see inside yourself like I did. My son is everything I ever was multiplied by 10, maybe 20. You know what I mean? And I sat there and I thank God, man, that I got a program where I go to meetings. You know what I mean? My claim day is September 15, 1998. I plan to go to a meeting every day. I'm not telling you that I go to a meeting every day, but I don't wake up a day and say I'm not going to go to a meeting today. You know what I mean? I got a meeting is kind of incorporated in my life. And what had been happening, man, I've been going to a meeting at 7 o'clock in the meeting Monday through Friday. I go to a meeting at 7 o'clock in the meeting. And at 4 o'clock, they told me that I wasn't going to wake nobody up in my family to inform them that this is what's happened, you know what I mean, that his mother and all that. And so I went to the 7 o'clock meeting, and I came here with y'all, man. I thank God for Narcotics Anonymous. It gave me a place where I could come and I could share my life's joys and sadnesses. And I came in, I told some people what had happened, and then I got with the mother, man, and it made me call the coroner, man. I'm talking because she was talking about like I thank God that I didn't get to see my son. You know what I mean? In that state, you know what I mean? Because the coroner was he was just too graphic to be telling the parent like what had happened. You know what I mean? And I thank God that I didn't see that image, but I'm not gonna tell you that image does bother me sometimes while I sleep or in the morning when I wake. So I called the mother and I said, told her what had happened, you know what I mean? And nobody really surprised, you know what I mean? But like surprised, like, you know what I mean? Like I'm saying, I never really expected to have to bury my child. You know what I mean? I knew he lived a lifestyle that it was possible, but I never really expected to have to bury my child. I love my son. We had a very tight relationship, even though he had spent a lot of time in and out of jail. And I'm just talking about like you're talking about from lost to light. And somewhere inside that process, man, we just talking about having to find a level of acceptance and going through the realities of my whole situation as it was, not as I wanted to be. My son was self-proclaimed like he did some stuff and that's who he was. You know what I mean? Like, no matter what I wanted, like who he was who he was. And we had conversation. And he told me, like, you know, there's something like, Daddy, like, I know you want some other stuff from me, but this is who I am. Can you love me as I am? And I'm talking about, what do you say to your child when your child tells you that, I don't know what you say to yours, but I say, yeah, I'm going to love you where you at. And I was still trying to drop little seeds and stuff on him along the way because I'm trying to see hopefully he can grow out of that and grow to this. Because I remember, like, I was out there and I did all the things that I did. And I remember waking up one day at 34 years old saying, this is like what I'm doing with my life ain't what I want to do with my life. This ain't got nothing to do with love. I had a 4-year-old and a 12-year-old. And I wanted to show them more about being a man that I had been showing them. And I had hoped that one day that he would wake up and have that same thought that this ain't it. I know what love looks like because I can look around and see what my family is and see what they've given me. And that's what love is and move in that direction. And it just hadn't worked. You know what I mean? And I came here and I'm talking about the members. These members are here that know me. They know that struggle and that. And I'm talking about being blessed to have had a conversation with my son. A couple weeks prior to that. So I know how my son felt about me as a father and as a dad. You know what I mean? Like he it was no animosity. I think I did a pretty good job, and I wasn't the guy that he had been told that I was by some family members on his mother's side, that who I was, that I wasn't that. Because I've always been visible and I've always been present in my son's life, even through active addiction. I'm not gonna tell you I was a good father or good dad in active addiction, because active addiction, you isolate yourself. But I was present because my father taught me to say, like, make sure your children know who you are. Regardless of our finances, make sure they know who you are. And I was able to do that. So as I go through the process with him dying, like talking to his mother and being able to find some balance in this program, having to handle like I ain't never buried nobody. You know, and I ain't really have a whole lot of grief, the grieving part with my son, because inside of myself, I believe I was the best father I could possibly be. And I ain't telling you like perfect, but I accept me as I am. So going through all that, man, and being able to kind of like let his mother have her way. Whatever you want is what we're going to do. And I included everybody. You know, and that was like the hardest part, just to have him sit there and make funeral arrangements and allow everybody to do whatever it was they wanted and have and get whatever it is they wanted, because I did like the urns and stuff like that. I got a little butterfly in my son that I sit underneath my TV because I spend a lot of my time in the living room. And that's where I'm able to look at that and see him. Sometimes have a conversation with him. Because you're talking about like going from loss to life, like I gotta live after this, because I still was left with a 5-year-old granddaughter. I still got a 40-year-old, got a son who turned 40. I'm like, God, I've really gotten old here, you know what I mean? But he get ready to turn 40, and I got a 21-year-old daughter. And even though there were moments where I felt like I wanted to check out, because the pain got real great, and I wanted to check out, and I didn't know what checking out, whether it was using or whether it was a bridge. And I got closer to y'all. I stayed with y'all, you know what I mean? Because I know that I'm drug-free. I ain't drug-proof. I know the using is always an option. I just try not to make it an active choice. I'm very aware that I still have it. It ain't gone nowhere. You know what I mean? And it still looks for an opportunity to come inside of my life and create a crack that'll help me go against the program that I've been building so hard to try to create a life worth living. And it'll have me wander off course and go astray of what it is I know I should do, and as opposed to what may feel good. When I'm in painful situations, I reach out and I grab stuff, and because I can't handle dope, I grab some other stuff. And I watch that, and I talk. I got people around me that'll tell me the truth about what it is I need to do, tell me what I need to hear, not what I want to hear. So I don't know. Man, we went to the process, man, having the service, man, and it was beautiful. You know what I mean? Like, cause I didn't want to go. I didn't want to see my son in the cast. I didn't want to view his body. But his mother told me I had to because she couldn't. And, you know, I knew that, like he needed to be in a specific order that so that she could see him that way. And it was really nice because when I see my son today in that casket, Jack, it's not an ugly memory. You know what I mean? Like, he was at a peaceful kind of, like, you know, like I know you say he was at a peace. He was dead, but he didn't look like he was dead. You know what I mean? He looked like, And I'm talking about, like, inside of my mind, a part of me to understand that my son tried to do a whole lot of things to come out of that lifestyle that he was in, but he just kept getting trapped in it. You know what I mean? And I believe that at some point in time, Jack, he had really become free. And leaving this world from this side of it just kind of freed him up. My belief ain't got to be nobody else. You know what I mean? So I've accepted that. Like I used to say, man, he just wasn't built for this world. Because no matter what he tried, it just didn't fit. And through that whole process, man, like she was talking, man, a whole lot of good things came out of it. I was able to mend some relationships that I had struggled with in a couple of years, because some of it was my behavior, some of it was your interpretation of my behavior. Because addicts can be some very judgmental people. You know what I mean? I've done a 12 step. I've been through 1 through 9. I know exactly who I am and what I'm capable of, so I'm really non-judgmental. You know what I mean? I know I can do anything without prior notice to you or me. So I don't judge people. But some relationships came back, man, because I don't know, it's like when you lose a child, man, like people just come out. And what I did know, you talked about it. Like, I'm from Baltimore City. I live in Dundalk, but I'm from Baltimore City. I didn't know that so many people had lost their children. I just didn't know that, you know what I mean? And I lost my kid to a violent act. My son was shot. You know what I mean? And I was in a meeting. I'm talking about being in a meeting and listening to, like, the day, it was either the day before or a week before, but the dude was saying, like, he held his son. His son got his brains blown out, and he held his son. And I'm sitting there saying, damn, I couldn't imagine that. And then somebody said, like, I might need him one day. And I'm talking about, as I was going through the whole process, like, I started reaching out to people that I heard that had lost their child. Some stayed clean, some used. And I started getting with the ones that stayed clean first. Because I need to know what you did to help you get through, because what I do know is that, like, I don't want one more. I don't want to go on, I don't want to do that. And I started allowing those people to tell me what they did, and I stayed in meetings, I called people, and people allowed me to cry. And I'm talking about it always not being, sometimes it wasn't the person that I thought should be there. I'm talking about, they said, like, not going away unless you got a plan. You know, it's something they tell you early in recovery. And I thank God for sponsorship, you know what I mean? Because, man, my sponsor worked some crazy hours and stuff like that. But I'm talking about, like, I was telling what I was going to do and how my plan was for that day. And, like, he never would say nothing. But, like, I might be in the meeting. Like, I might be doing this meeting right here or be in the meeting right here. And I would look up and he'd be in the back of the meeting. And I'm just talking about having somebody to keep a watchful eye over me. And it was things like that was happening. People was just showing up and they would be there. Not necessarily just having something to say and sometimes wanting people to be there. Sometimes, like, getting over the fact that you're mad because the person that you think should be there ain't there. Ain't nobody really talking to you as you go through this. And the day I understand they ain't talking to me because they just don't understand what to say to me in this situation. Nobody knows how to talk to you, man. My main man came in. And I remember going to him because sometimes, like, some of the hardest things and hardest fears you have here are about how somebody else sees what happened to yours. And I needed a safe place, man. I'm talking about being here and creating relationships that give you a safe place to be able to put your uchiawis. And I remember saying, look, man, I need to talk to you. And I need you to kind of give me a non-judgmental spot because I need to talk about who my son really was. Really was. And we sat in this garage, Jack, and just had a conversation, man, and some tears hit my eyes. And ain't nobody give me no tissue or none of that stuff. He just allowed me to feel what I was feeling, get out what I needed to get out, and then we did whatever we needed to do. Because that's where the healing starts at. You got to kind of, like, let go of what's inside. For me, I got a real good female friend here. First woman that I've probably loved like this and not slept with. You know what I mean? Because I don't really flirt with that emotion too much. You know what I mean? But she gave me that spot too. But it's nothing like that 7 o'clock in the morning meeting that I go to, man, that allowed me to come in, because it's the kind of situation that you don't know how long you're going to talk about this. You know what I mean? Talking about radical acceptance, had to come inside. I had to accept my son exactly as he was. I didn't call my son a gangster. He told me he was. He was. You know, man, like, we had been battling with going in and out of jail for about, what, 17 years? He's been a whole lot of his time in jail. I ain't here to bash him. That's just what he did. In and out, in and out, in and out. So we talking about having some behavioral or disorders, issues, and probably some mental health too. Untreated or undiagnosed. Because I didn't know that, like, he had been diagnosed as schizophrenic some years prior. I didn't know that. I don't know why I didn't know it, but I didn't know it. And I would see him spaz out sometimes, and I'd be like, what, God? Because when he spazzed out, it reminded me of me. Because I got a spaz. It just take a long time for me to get there. His button was right here. Mine's is on the back wall. You gotta do a whole lot to get me to get there. But when I get there, I don't like that guy. And I'm talking about having a conflict. Me and my father went somewhere because I got a motorcycle. And sometimes stuff, they charge you too much. And I be mad about money because I ain't got a whole lot of money. You know, I be mad about money. And I remember having to go somewhere and I told my father, like, if you see me move, grab me before I take that second step. Because I know I'm in trouble if I take that second step. You know what I mean? Because, like, you done said something. So, like, I got that. I know that part of me. And I'm just talking about coming here long enough that you got to kind of, like, get to learn who you are. Fourth and fifth step says, like, I got to see me coming, Jack, and I got to be able to put that stuff in position. Your first step is the most important step you're ever going to do in your life. And I'm talking about when I say that because in order to live, you got to remove denial. I got to get rid of all those false pretenses of what I thought it was or what it was and see it as it is. I ain't going to do nothing until I see it as it is. So as I was beginning to find some acceptance, like this is what it is, I began to heal. I had the ability to make a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God, as I understood him at that particular time. And at that particular time, it may be the group. Because I believe that God works through you all. You know what I mean? I believe I believe it's something greater than us all. I believe in the universe and all that thing. But I believe God's going to come to me and he's going to speak to me through you. He's going to allow me to call my friend and say, look, I'm hurting, man. Where you at? Where you at? I'm your brother. Where you at? And I remember our conversation. I ain't going to tell y'all our conversation. But I remember our conversation, he apologized, and you know what I mean, like it wasn't really less, but I understood because he felt like he had abandoned me, he had fell short. I knew his humanness, I know who I am to him. But I'm talking about having the ability to not leave people on the hook when they're not able to be somewhere in a certain situation because you're relevant in my life. I thank God for each and every one of you who've ever allowed me to have a conversation with you. Like, I don't take none of that stuff for granted because I know I need all of y'all for my life. You know what I mean? Like, even like, every time I see Josh, he talk about the coffee he spilled on me. You know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm talking about needing all that. You know what I mean? When I'm looking at dudes and I'm seeing, like, I remember when they got here, they were new and they ain't know nobody and they were stuck and they here. Like, I'm talking about coming here, man. I ain't got no beef with nobody in Narcotics Anonymous. No beef. If you don't like me, that's on you. And I'm going to tell you why you don't like me. Because you don't know me. All I'm going to say is, like if you take the time out to get to know me, you're going to find out that I'm just as loving and caring as you are. I got as much bullshit with me as you got with you. Equally. You know what I'm saying? But I got as much of this recovery thing with me as you have with you. And I'm talking about we get together and we have those kind of conversations where I'm able to take a little bit from you and give you a little bit of me and you give me a little bit of you and I'm able to enhance the program that I have. You know, the first 13 years of my life, Jack, like this, I studied this stuff. Studied it. I know it. I came here and y'all gave me an opportunity to live. So all right, now, so stop sharing what you wrote. Live it. Yeah. Live it. Apply these spiritual principles in your life, and I ain't got to tell you I'm a recovering addict. You should be able to see that. Mm. I had to go in the mornings. My mother has dementia. She's getting ready to turn 82. And we just talking about living after loss. I lose my mother every day. Every day. She's got dementia. I got to go in the morning and help my father, who's getting ready to turn 86, just to get out of bed because he doesn't have the strength that he used to have. And as I'm helping get her out the bed, I'm realizing I don't have the strength that I used to have. You know what I mean? But like looking at my mother, man, and this morning I said, I got to go ahead. I'm coming out here and hang out with my some of my dope fiend and crackhead friends. You know what I mean? And she said, huh? I said, you remember when I used to get high, don't you? She said, no. I said, damn, Dad, I've been clean long enough for her to have forgotten that I used to get high. Because my mother ain't forgot that. Tomorrow we'll be talking about that. You know what I mean? She'll be saying, like, stay, you know, keep yourself together. You know what I mean? And I'm just talking about being able to come here, man, become productive. I'm living again. You know, the day that I said I wanted to check out, I didn't know how I felt. The next day we took a motorcycle ride. My boys came and got me out the house. And I didn't feel like that no more. I could see the meaning and purpose in my life, not the motorcycle, just the ride, just the joy that I could see. I could see God still working in my life. You know, I don't know, you know what I mean? I don't know when, I don't think I'll ever be okay again. I know I'll be all right, but there's a part of me that's probably going to always have that little hole, that little gap inside me, because my son was like my best friend. You know what I mean? Like my son was a place like, you know what I mean? If y'all think sharing, me and my son had, you know, I could sponsor my son if there was such a thing as sponsoring your son. You know what I mean? Because he had the ability to share openly and honestly with me things that I didn't want to know. But I knew because I had come here that he also needed somewhere, a place safe to put his stuff. He needed to be able to share freely. And I was able to share with him of myself freely too. I was able to give him my boogaboos. The same things that I had given y'all, I had given to him. Because I wanted to be sure that my sons knew who I am, know who I am and who I was. I want them to be able to see what I've grown from. My son was a man. Regardless of what he had done, how he lived his life, he was a good man. I'm talking about he stood on his word. I'm not telling you that he was a law-abiding citizen. I'm saying that if he got caught, he said, I did this shit. And I'm talking about my kids live a life where they say, like my father told me that if I got to be ashamed of it or I got to hide it or it's got to be a secret, I probably shouldn't be doing it. I'm just talking about me having the ability to give them some good quality of life. You know what I mean? If I did that, I did that. You know what I mean? I'm going to stand when I did that and I'll take the consequences that come along with I did that. You know what I mean? Because I know the only way that God is going to continue to help me to grow is through my truths. You know what I mean? Like you know what I mean? My lies don't help me. Deceit don't help me. The truth not only sets you free, it makes you free. I'm free. I'm free. I'll share anything about my life anywhere to anyone because I'm free. I ain't got no shame, guilt, and remorse inside of me because I did that. I know what shame, guilt, and remorse are due to an addict. It'll help create resentments, keep rocks in your pockets, and you're walking around mad and pissed off and shit all the time. I've been there. I don't want to live like that. I got life. Got an opportunity to live happy, joyous, and free so long as I choose. So long as I choose. You know, I tell everybody, man, get yourself a home group. Find somebody to believe and want to help you, man, and develop a program. Your program ain't got to be my program. It ain't got to be your sponsor's program. But your program should be similar to another recovering addict. I should be able to see something inside of my program that look like something inside of yours. Not the whole thing, not word for word, verbatim, you know what I mean? Not foot for foot, but it should be similar so that I know I'm on the right path. Because if it ain't similar to that, I might be walking backwards. You know what I mean? I take another look says that we never know. Never know whether the choice or decision that we're making is a decision for ongoing continued recovery or a decision to go back to use. The only person I have to look at right here consistently is me. Consistently. Because I'm the one that'll make that choice or decision to go get one more, Jack, and not tell you enough time to help me save my life. Losing my son has been the worst thing in my life. don't know if I'm out of the dark yet. I don't know. It's been 4 months. It's still new. It's still fresh. The pain still hurts. You know what I mean? I wake up every morning. I miss them. I go to bed at night. I miss them. Then I have some days where I don't think about them until late in the day. But I think about them often. I think about the missed opportunities, the missing opportunities. Because he had great business strategies. Had he just gotten on this side of the law, he'd have been an awesome, I could see millionaire in him. But what I do know is that I got fences that can't be straddled. You know what I mean? The old man can't live in the new way. When I got here, y'all told me that if the old man don't die, the new man can't live. I'm still working on killing the old man. He still shows up. I be thinking he gone. You know what I mean? I got a wife now and shit. She'll let me know. That motherfucker, you know, she'll let me know. You know what I mean? She will let me know. And I listen because she got that 215 posture. If y'all don't know what 21215 is, that's Park Heights. They know now, shit. You know what I mean? You fuck around and find out. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? And I don't want that kind of smoke in my life, man. I'm just talking about coming here and learning how to live a harm reduction program. And sometimes the person I got to work on bringing the most harm to is myself. Because after everybody's gone, I still have to live with the voices in my mind. And the steps give you an opportunity to free yourself from that. You know, those noises. You know the one where they say the drugs stop working? It may not stop getting high. It means they just couldn't quiet down the noises anymore. And now there's the things that I take outside of that aren't drugs to help me be free of my feelings, my escape routes, whether it be pudding, motorcycles, cheesesteaks, Lay's potato chips. They all take me to a place of being out of control with myself. And I lose sight. My first step allows me to get free from those things, but I got to come out of denial first. Got to be able to look and got to see what this is really doing in my life. You know, I had an obsessive disorder with my son. You know what I mean? Like, I tried to fix him. He wasn't mine to fix. It's between him and God. Is that sound for me? Is that for me?
Oh, yes.
Got to hold it high. I couldn't see. I'm glad I just saw it. You know what I mean? So, look, I don't know. Like, I lost my son. I'll miss my son until the day I die. But I'm learning how to live without his presence. I don't celebrate his death day. I mean, I don't get sad. His birthday was the January 29th. I wasn't all sad. I celebrated his life. I put a balloon in the air. If there is a place called heaven, if there is such a place, I pray that this balloon reaches you. You understand what I'm saying? Because I can have all the belief that I want, but I need to know. I just want you to know if there is a place. Because I believe that even if you ask for repentance at the last second, you can go. You know what I mean? And so look, I hope you all have a great time at the convention. You know, I'm glad for those that came out just to support me. You know what I mean? And if you've lost a child, my condolences. My condolences. You know what I mean? And I hope that at some point in time we're able to have a conversation where we both can find some healing along the conversation. Thanks for allowing me to share.
I would like to thank Christina and Leon for sharing a great meeting. As a reminder, the free entertainment for Friday night is bingo in the Warfield Room. It starts at 10 p.m. Oh.
Hello?
Whoops. Saturday night, comedy show in the Fitzgerald Ballroom starts at 10 p.m. Don't forget to visit Merchandise Hospitality and grab a coffee from the coffee station. Can we close this meeting with a moment of silence by the Serenity Prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
You bump back, damn it.
That's okay.